Is a workshop for the city and borough of Wrangell, Alaska. And Kim, could I get you to call roll, please?
Sure. Assembly members Gilbert?
Here.
Morrison?
Here.
DeLong said she would not be attending tonight. Decker?
Julie, you're muted.
I'm here now.
Alrighty. Thank you. Powell?
Here.
Larrabee?
Here.
And Mayor Prisanka?
Here. Does anybody have any conflict of interest they wish to declare?
Mayor?
Yes, go ahead, Julie.
I'll declare a potential conflict of interest for our family's commercial fishing business. We own a commercial fishing vessel, and our two kids also work on adult kids, but kids work on other commercial fishing vessels. And then secondly, I work for the Alaska Fisheries Development Foundation, which is a nonprofit, statewide nonprofit, focused on seafood industry R&D issues.
Thank you, Julie. I don't see any economic advantage to you directly, so we will declare that you don't have a conflict if agreeable to the assembly. At this point, I'll hand the gavel to Vice Mayor Gilbert and declare that my wife and I are minority shareholders in our son's fishing business.
Pending any assembly dissent, I find you have no conflict of interest.
Thank you, Assembly Member Gilbert. Persons to be heard, do we have any, or sorry, it's a workshop. I don't think we're doing persons to be heard. Okay, Lisa, I think we're ready for you to do an update then, please.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I have a small handful of things this evening before we get into what I assume will be a more substantive discussion by the assembly regarding crisis situation, tolerance levels, and those sorts of things that Assembly Member Gilbert so smartly brought up at our Monday work session. So the first is that Kim has been working with Cindy at the Nolan Center, and our EOC staff has been reviewing a new COVID-19 website for the for our resources that is much more updated and fresh and new. And so we expect that to be rolled out very shortly. Captain Spray and the mayor have been working on initial planning for the alternate isolation site that was approved by the assembly on Monday. And I can let either one of them comment on that, but just to let you know, that's ongoing. As I reported on Monday, on Tuesday, there was a meeting with Commissioner Crum and the communities of Southeast Alaska regarding small ship cruising. I'll just get straight to the punchline on that. Essentially, the commissioner said, we think it'd be a good idea if the communities worked with the industry and came up with a plan. And so thankfully, the Passenger Vessel Association and the Alaska Travel Industry Association had been starting to work on some things and were very eager to speak with the municipalities about stuff. And so we are having two meetings tomorrow through AML. There is an afternoon meeting with Southeast Alaska communities and representatives of the Passenger Vessel Association and leadership from the Alaska Travel Industry Association. Prior to that, Wrangell requested AML pull together a meeting of just the communities so that we could, as municipalities, have an offline discussion, a frank conversation without anybody else on the line, because that allows us to be able to speak freely about what our municipal concerns or desires may be related to small ship cruising in the area. And it allows us to come together with a more cohesive voice before we meet with industry. So that meeting will take place at 9 o'clock tomorrow morning, and then the meeting with industry will take place at 1 o'clock in the afternoon. It is my understanding that American Cruise canceled their first June sailing. So we are down to what looks like, I believe, one potential small ship cruise sailing in June. And then it's on to July from there. And so we don't know where things will go. I will let the assembly know again, the city of Ketchikan is actually having an assembly discussion tonight, or excuse me, a city council discussion tonight as to whether or not they even want cruise ship traffic at all in their community this summer. So that I expect that we will have a report from City Manager Amelon tomorrow morning when we speak as municipalities. As the assembly is very likely aware, last night the governor introduced the Reopen Alaska Responsibly Plan Phase 2, which takes us to the next level of reopening in a number of different areas of the economy. It takes restaurants to 50%, I believe bars to 25%. It allows for, and I think Kim actually has this memorized because she was just writing a press release about this. It allows for libraries, museums, and theaters to open at certain percentages under certain circumstances. It allows gyms and pools to be reopened. So that includes all of the remaining closed facilities that we have, with the exception of the fire department, which we will keep closed because it houses the emergency operations center. But we need to release, we will be releasing a press release that Kim has developed tomorrow to let folks know that even though the governor said we're ready to go on Friday, our folks are going to need some time to ramp up and do things. And we're hopeful that much of our facilities can be open next week, but there are some safety concerns that are had, and those staff have been and are continuing to work through things. And then we have a meeting. I have a meeting at 10 a.m. with those department heads on Monday to discuss what it's going to take to get open. But the press release that Kim drafted will go out tomorrow to alert the public that we're working on this. And as soon as we have a safe plan for reopening for those facilities, we will do so. Assemblymember Decker brought up, it's been a couple of weeks ago now, actually maybe not quite a couple of weeks, but a couple of meetings ago, our need to review our emergency order that the assembly passed in March. So on Tuesday's agenda, there is a resolution for your consideration that will rescind both the emergency order passed by the assembly and the emergency order, I think one or two of them that were signed by administration, and offer local recommendations for appropriate activities locally. Again, that won't be a mandate, but just local recommendations like wearing a mask and appropriate hygiene and, you know, social distancing and have your own personal bubble and your team and all of these new buzzwords that we are coming to know in our everyday language about how we keep ourselves safe as reopening continues and we have more and more people coming to town and more people traveling back and forth. So that will be on the agenda. There will also be a resolution on the agenda to accept the $35,000 grant from the state, COVID-19 mitigation grant from the state that is from the Commercial Passenger Vessel Fund related to port activities. So that'll be on the agenda for your approval. And there are also a couple of other grant opportunities that are out there. There's a CARES specific grant for fire and EMS that the fire department is working on some things for, and there is a public safety specific CARES grant that the police department is working on some items for, and specifically the police department is looking at, we have the second U.S. Forest Service police rig that we acquired up in the Anchorage area that needs to be brought down, and the new police rig that needs to be brought down. And so specific to the grant is the allowance to be able to ship things related to COVID response. And rather than, it's much safer to have those vehicles shipped than it would be to send our staff up to get them. So the police chief is looking at that. And what we're also looking at in the fire department and the police department is UVC lights that are providing a measure of disinfectant, not only for the vehicles, but specifically for the police department in the jail as well. And apparently there are some mobile units. And so not only could they be used there, but maybe in other city facilities when they don't have to be used in the jail. It's just one more level of disinfectant. So that's something that we're looking at. We got notice today that there is the Economic Development Administration was given a significant chunk of CARES money as well. Somewhere in the billions. I mean, a lot. I'm sorry, I don't have the exact number. But Sherry Klein from Senator Murkowski and Sullivan's office forwarded me the EDA CARES Recovery Grant Program. She sent that to both Carol and myself today. And so we'll be looking into that. A lot of that is designed to help with distressed businesses and career, you know, retooling and all of these things that happen when you've got a major economic strife in an area, which happens to be the entire United States right now. But that's something that we'll be looking at to see if there are funding opportunities that we can apply for that then provide assistance out into the business community as well. And the Economic Development Committee met yesterday, and Assemblymember Decker is the chair of that. So I think I'd actually like her to report out on that if she wouldn't mind. And so Mr. Mayor, if it's okay with you, I'd like to go to Assemblymember Decker for that. And then I'd like to ask Captain Spray to report out if she wouldn't mind following that.
Please, Julie, please give us an update there.
Sure. We had a quorum and we talked about basically some different things that might be able to support either people in need in the community or businesses in need, whether through financial support or sort of incentivizing or spurring local business, particularly into the fall and winter. A lot of the support networks that are in place from the federal government are likely to keep folks afloat during the summer, but we're concerned about once that stuff dries up and folks may be in a particular pinch in the late summer and fall. So it was basically a brainstorming session. So we kind of put out all of the different ideas that we could think of, and in between now and next Wednesday, I believe we're gonna try to narrow that down to a short list of ideas and meet again to sort of finalize those, and hopefully we'll have something to forward to the assembly for consideration.
Thank you. Does anybody have any questions for Julie? Captain Spray.
Thank you. I just wanted to talk a little bit of what Lisa talked about the reopen of Alaska and phase two that the government, the governor, stated yesterday was opening at about 5:15. They did post the guidance documents that go with each of these items that are to be implemented starting tomorrow. Now, I know Wrangell's going to look at these and may not necessarily be opening as of tomorrow, but they did post the guidance document, and they also made some amendments to the previous areas that were already open. So we are looking through that right now just to see how we can help these businesses as they reopen, what we can do on our Reopen Wrangell Task Force to help them, and just kind of decipher the different changes and see what we have coming our way. Mayor Prusunka, would you like me to talk about the shelter discussion we had this afternoon, or would you like to give that update?
No, you can. I just would like to not mention the at this point any of the details of the individual that we had.
Sure, absolutely.
Thank you.
So we've been working to get written confirmation from Trident. We've had verbal confirmation that we can use one of their four bunkhouses. So we're working on, they are putting together an agreement, and we'll be sending that to us. And so with that, it'll decide which building they allow us to use, and that again in turn will decide how many people can fit in it. So and this is for our alternate site for sheltering for potential or those who have tested or are known to be COVID positive, or those who are tested and are in isolation. So we're working with the Red Cross to get some shelter management training in place prior to opening such a facility or housing place. And so they're going to be hosting that with a number of other communities as this need has come up, not only in Wrangell. So working with those guys following FEMA and Red Cross guidelines for this facility. Working on obtaining some more PPE, not only for our city, the different entities within the city, but also looking at kind of reinforcing EMS as everything is opening up. When everything was closed down, I feel like EMS, we were doing okay on supplies. So now that we've really taken a hard look at what we have on hand, we recognize the need to add some more stuff there. I know we're working on a lot of stuff for our social media and making some changes like Lisa talked about, making some changes there, and we'll be a hotline number to call. Because there's so much different guidance coming out as phase two is reopened, and there's going to be so many more questions, and we're already fielding a lot of questions and emails and text messages. So just having a route for folks to get some questions answered there. So that is in the works, and AP&T will be coming up tomorrow to work on kind of changing some phone lines around for us to make that happen. So with that, if there's any questions, I'll stay on.
Anybody have any questions for Captain Spray?
Mr. Mayor, we did get something prepared today that clearly outlines the three email addresses to which people can request specific information. So masks@wrangell.com is for people that still may need masks, and the library is still giving those out and has given out, I think, almost 400, she reported, 370 some, I think, was the number today at our staff meeting, Margaret did. And then travel@wrangell.com is an email address that people can go to if they have any questions about travel mitigation plans for critical workforce infrastructure, or anybody that wants to travel for critical personal reasons or just general personal reasons and has questions and wants answers about that. And then reopen@wrangell.com is specific for any business that has a question about the phases of reopening and any issues related to the Open Wrangell Responsibly Task Force. So any questions that you have related to business can go to reopen@wrangell.com. And those are being staffed by different people and responded to. And basically what we've said is send an email response within 48 hours. That's just, under normal circumstances, it'll be far sooner than that, but we just wanted to make sure that if somebody were to email in over the weekend and there it wasn't checked, that would give a sufficient amount of time. So, and just one other thing, both Assemblymember Decker and our federal lobbyists provided us with a copy of what's being called the SALT Act that was introduced by Senator Sullivan and is being co-sponsored by Senator Murkowski. It is an act in Congress that will allow us to allow municipalities to use CARES Act funding as revenue, lost revenue reimbursement, which would be great. And there is actually a resolution on Tuesday's assembly agenda offering support for that act. There is one thing, this information will be in the agenda statement, but just to keep into consideration, there is some concern because there is expected to be more federal assistance coming down the line, that if this act goes through, that states will feel like municipalities are then taken care of. And if more federal funding comes down, that the states will just take it and will not give any more money to municipalities. So there may be a double-edged sword here. So anyway, just something to consider as we talk maybe about the assembly supporting the SALT Act. And Mr. Mayor, I think that is it. Prior to getting into our sort of crisis situation discussion.
Great. I do have a question for you. We are getting reports of bear hunters here in town, and bear hunter chartering is going on. I heard a report today that somebody was planning steelhead trips and basically completely ignoring. Can you please just outline for folks what is open? Because it seems like things are getting thrown kind of wide open here, and maybe remind folks of the process to be able to do these activities.
Mr. Mayor, I may have to get back to you with some more detailed information. I will tell you that Chief Radke, after our EOC meeting today, reached out to our Fish and Game, our brown shirt trooper that's here in town regarding bear hunting. And he had been out and was supposed to be back in town sometime after 5 and was going to touch base with the chief. So we'll probably have a report on the bear hunting legality stuff in the morning, as soon as he's able to follow up with him. I do know that there was a specific attachment to Mandate 16 dealing with charter boat fishing, and ADF&G issued guidance a couple of weeks ago basically saying charter boat fishing and sport fishing is wide open. And so how that marries up with in-state or intrastate travel restrictions is, you know, that's one of those quagmires that we're still wading through. So let me, I have not read the charter boat guidance in a while. I read the initial ADF&G release, and then there was an attachment to Mandate 16 that came out about that, but I will need to refresh myself, or perhaps, I don't mean to throw Captain Spray under the bus, but maybe she's got maybe she's read it more recently than I have and could answer that question.
Captain Spray, you want to take a stab at that?
Actually, it's going to take a bit. That mandate was one of the ones that were revised, or there were amendments to, as of today. So that all changes, and so we'll need to review that before moving forward.
Thank you. I guess for me, it just comes down to that we have this interstate travel ban for non-essential travel. But if you're going steelhead fishing and you want to come down from Anchorage, you're good to go. But if you want to go up to your daughter's wedding in Fairbanks, you're not good to go. It's just so all over the map. And so the more clarification we do for the community, I think it's really unfair that folks are stopped from doing personal travel. But if it has to do anything with commerce, so maybe what they need to do is say that the wedding is actually a steelhead fishing trip, and you can go to the wedding as long as you bring your rod. It's just crazy. And I can't keep track of it anymore. It's just insane. So I'm going to go with Julie first and then Drew. Julie, I think you might still be on mute, or there's something going on. We're not keeping you. There you go.
Thanks. I just looked online really quickly. As Dee Dee mentioned, that this new fishing charter attachment J came out today, but it's applicable to day fishing charters, not overnight. And there's a whole host of restrictions. So on the operation, couple three pages long, but just it is supposed to be for just day operations. So it is somewhat restrictive. It wouldn't apply to somebody coming from Anchorage.
I agree. I wouldn't think, but we've had a report that a charter operator's looking at firing up. So Assemblymember Larrabee.
I just wanted to say thank you to you guys, especially Dorian and Lisa, for really keeping up on all these things. I know that there's, like you said, Mayor Prasunka, that there's so many things going on and so many changes, it's impossible to keep track of everything. And I appreciate everybody's attempt to keep track of it and try to interpret it as best we can. And like you said, it really is an interpretation at this point, and we're all just kind of grasping at the what is acceptable and not. So thank you everyone for your best attempt to make the best light of everything.
Well put, Drew, thank you. I think that I echo those sentiments that folks are doing a great job. Any other questions for either City Manager Von Bargen or Captain Spray? All right, hearing none, then City Manager Von Bargen, do you want to lead the assembly through the next part of this process here?
Mr. Mayor, I'm happy to attempt to do that. I have to be honest with you that my ability to pull a straw man sort of threshold level step together did not materialize given my workload over the last couple of days. But I guess the question I want to pose is related to the first question I'd like to pose to the assembly is related to what Dr. Prasunka brought up a couple of weeks ago to the assembly, which is what is the threshold that you have before you would like to see Wrangell take local action? Don't necessarily need to determine exactly what that action would be, but when is it that you think there would need to be some changes? Is it when we have a positive case? Is it when we have more than one positive case? Is it when we have a positive case that is then hospitalized? Is it more than one hospitalized case? Those sorts of things. And so I guess I'd like to start with that opening question to the assembly. What is your threshold for us to consider different action that might be more restrictive than what the state has, or us asking the state to allow us to roll back things or to enact some local requirements?
Thank you. Assemblymember Larrabee.
So I actually had a great deal of thought on that this weekend. Thursday, I had some flu-like symptoms and quarantined myself and had a nasal swab on Friday and sat thinking about the people I had interacted with over the week. And it really bothered me to think about it. And it bothered me because I thought, you know, if I did have a positive result, which I didn't, of course, I had a negative result on Monday, which is fine. But it really got me thinking, you know, if one person has a positive result, we've got a bigger problem than that one person. And I know that person will be a pariah of this community. But that means that person would have interacted with people at the store and at their place of work. And, you know, as we open things up, we're going to have much bigger problems than one person. So at the point that we have a single positive case, we are going to have to change what we're doing and take action, because it probably means that 20 other people have been interacted with and are likely to be the next positive cases. So at one case, we need to change what we do, I believe. And then that, I think, gets progressively more steep as the number of cases increases. But as Dr. Prasunka stated, we have the capacity for 16 people. We can meet that capacity very quickly. If one person has a positive test result, they most likely have interacted with considerably more than 16 people. And with the age of our population and our community, it could become severe pretty quickly.
Thank you, Assemblymember Larrabee. Assemblymember Gilbert.
Yes, I echo Assembly Member Larrabee's concerns. That's why I think we truly need a three-prong approach with our medical professionals, our first responders in the city, and develop a ready-to-go plan. We could call it a local advisory and or a local mandate. I don't know about the legal implications of that, but the things that the city officials will know is we won't know the health conditions of individuals testing positive, and we won't know the severity of the individuals that have been hospitalized. We won't be able to know that. We won't know the percent of false negative tests. My friend last week, I found out that her robust, healthy 40-year-old son died 30 hours after he received the negative COVID test. And so he was one of those false negatives that fell through the cracks. So, and we won't know the possible contagion of one individual. For instance, Assembly Member Larrabee may have been in contact with multiple people, whereas someone who's really self-isolating may not have that jeopardy. So, and we will not probably have any opportunity to spot any kind of trend of infection. So we really, as much as I would love to put a percentage or a number, I don't think we can do that. I think we have to really rely on the medical professionals and the first responders to tell us, okay, initiate phase one. You know, maybe it's a cautionary advisory. And then if that fails to stem the tide, then we go to another stricter second phase. Just my thoughts.
Great, thanks. Thanks, Assemblymember Gilbert. Assemblymember Decker, your hand up. I just wanna say a couple of things before you go. And I think that it's not, there's no ready-made formula to this, you guys. And the reason I say that is, as I'm writing this letter to the governor and going through their metrics, there's so many factors to play into this. There's testing availability, there's our surge plan and the available and our ability to initiate our surge plan. There is outside beds and our ability to transport to outside care. So then there's the effects on a region-wide basis. So is this a regional thing? Is it just a Southeast thing? Would we be able to transfer up to Anchorage or down to Seattle? So all those capacity issues play into this as well. And then there's the factor of who's on the horizon. Do we have a ship coming in on the horizon that is carrying 30 people and we are trying to manage our issue here? So that's another issue, because quite frankly, they may be able to manage 3 or 5 COVID positive patients fairly well, but if we're short of PPE, they can't. Then that changes that metric. So there's all these moving parts to that question. So I don't know if it's as easy as having like a red flag goes up, because the solution doesn't lend itself to a ready-made pull out the card, read the card, and we do it. It's all those factors that come into to play. So I would caution us against coming up with hard numbers, as much as I would like to say, you know, here's the hard number, let's turn it off. But I don't know if we can. And sorry, Julie, I didn't mean to jump in front of you there, but I've been focused on this letter for 3 days, Lisa and I have been trying to get this done, and it's just top of mind, all the different moving parts. So Julie, go ahead, please.
Thanks. I'm curious, we can see like nod of heads or something, but how many of the Assembly have been able to look at the state's website and they have like a dashboard with all the stats that are updated every day. Not sure if it, I have it pulled up. I could share it, but I don't know if Mr. Mayor, if you think that would be appropriate.
We could, but I know what you're talking about, the state dashboard where they go through and show the ventilators and the this and that, all the different. Yeah, I think, yeah, you go ahead if you want to show it. I would just remind you, Julie, that we're about to have 300 of our 300,000 or of, well, not maybe 300,000, maybe more of our most favorite guests dropping in too. So this is our snapshot of our reality today. It isn't a projection forward.
Yeah, absolutely right. And I think everything you said previous to this is very true. Putting one number out there is not looking at, you know, the broad set of metrics really that everybody needs to be paying attention to. And I think that's what search is paying attention to. And I think that's what the state, Dr. Zink is paying attention to. And that's what, this just represents that, you know, inpatient bed capacity, ICU bed capacity, ventilator capacity. I think, you know, a really important thing to look at is the total number of hospitalizations in the state since we started. I think it's 38. And I think that's up here. Yeah, so
yes, 38
hospitalizations out of 374 total cases. So not every person that's getting it, only about 1 in 10 are going to the hospital. And so I think that's really important for us to think about when we have 16 beds. And, you know, we also have to understand we don't have ICU beds, right? We have limited ventilator capacity. So anyway, I agree that it's multiple things. Saying, you know, one test positive and we've got to throw up a bunch of new restrictions, I don't think is the proper way to be looking at this. Because the other thing is that our local folks, our local EOC team will be watching these all the time. And the state team is watching these numbers for every community. They get the information reported to them by community. So if they see, and they've said this, if they see a spike in a community, they won't let that go by. Now, they haven't said specific numbers of what was going to get their attention to make further restrictions, but they have said in multiple mandates and press briefings, if there's a spike somewhere, they're going to take action to either roll back or clamp on further restrictions. Now, I don't mean that doesn't mean we shouldn't be considering what we need to do locally, but I guess my point is that there's multiple eyeballs watching these things. So I have a hard time with the assembly sort of setting a number out in the air.
Mr. Mayor, you're muted.
Thank you, Julie. Sorry about that. Yes, you're right. But I will point out that the best eyeballs are the eyeballs that are here. These are the best eyeballs because we're seeing real time. Don't forget that everything is delayed in terms of at the state. It takes time. And we've seen this over and over again, that it can take time. So I think for this assembly to maintain some control over this community's destiny is not a bad thing. We've been asked to give it up at every turn, and yet the state is offended when the feds want to take control from the state. I don't think it's bad for us to have a discussion about what is our tolerances. And I'll tell you, our medical director has clearly stated many times that her tolerance may be much lower than the state's, because the state may not maybe not have the same realistic expectation of the capacity of the facility here that, you know, that maybe is the reality on the ground. But I do agree that there's some good metrics out there. And, but I think in a smaller population, the chance to get overwhelmed is actually quicker than in a larger population. That in a larger population, it's more diverse and you've got, you know, what happens if you have all of a sudden an infection roll through, or sorry, you have a breach of protocol that causes multiple staff to go down in your hospital. We know that staffing is one of our issues that we have. That's nothing the state knows about. That's right here, right now. And so if they lose a doctor and four nurses because there's some breach of protocol that causes the contagion to be involved there, or staff becomes sick or whatever. So I do think it's not a bad discussion, and it's not a bad thing for us to say there is our own local ripcord. We may never use it, but I think we have to have that option. I really do. And I think the community deserves that our destiny is not completely controlled by an outside entity. I'll also, the only other thing I'll say is that I have been grossly disappointed in how the industry, particularly fisheries, has managed to monopolize the state and how mandates are written and rolled out to the communities. We have not had an opportunity to participate in these things. They've been forced upon us, and then we've been given an opportunity after they're written by the industry. And the only thing I could think of is it's the same sort of process that mining tries to do too, where don't worry, we'll police ourselves and it will all be fine. We don't even have any enforcement with the fishery right now. And we are expected to do some of that enforcement, but we don't even know the plans of the processors because they don't have to share them with the communities. So I think on a local level, we do have to maintain control and attempt to ensure that if there is an issue and it starts to blossom, that we're going to be able to move in and do something. But that doesn't remove the responsibility for us to do all that we can to keep industry people safe, keep our community safe. And that's why we're pushing forward with the isolation area, and we're pushing forward with the surge for the hospital, and we're pushing forward with, you know, appropriate staffing models for things like the isolation facility, so that if we do have an outbreak, we're going to have to deal with it. Nobody's going to rescue us. So I think I don't want to say that I don't want the only option to be additional mandates. I want us to be dealing proactively with things with our local industry and not wait for the state to do the right thing either. We need to be doing the right thing now with our local fishery guys and with everyone. And that's been my focus, is to, I don't want to have to pull the ripcord. I want us to be able to have a fishery and have business and stay open. But if we don't, if we're not proceeding cautiously and proactively, we'll lose it. So, Julie, please go ahead. I think you're still on mute, Julie.
I've got a double mute thing going on here. Thank you. In response to your comment that the seafood industry is manipulating the situation, I don't think that's fair. And from what I understand, the state is coordinating regional meetings between industry, communities, and medical capacity. And in Prince William Sound, the Aleutians, Bristol Bay, and Southeast. Southeast is supposed to be a week from today. They made Prince William Sound first because their salmon fishery is getting. Primarily in response to trying to implement what the state told folks that they're doing with new additional requirements on processes for testing and additional quarantine requirements. But it's trying to help a coordination effort, I guess, working through those issues. So, secondly, I 100% agree about proactive